The Future Brand Index is, we work in association with PwC, and we take their top 100 companies, which they themselves do every year, which is a market capitalization index. And then we take our research globally, and we talk to an informed global public about how they feel about the brands that are in this, the PwC top 100. We use a range of brand perception scores, and what we're able to do is rearrange the PwC top 100 based on future potential, and what we call being future-proofed. And what we get is an interesting reorganization of the PwC top 100 list. So brands that perhaps are very high in terms of market capitalization might be a little less high when it comes to their potential for the future. Similarly, it's the other way around for some brands that right now are not so high on the PwC top 100 actually have got a very exciting future ahead of them because they're seen and perceived to be very future-proofed.
We talk a lot about being a global economy, about international companies straddling all these world markets.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, despite there being some firms in the top 10 that are obviously household names, you know, Walt Disney Company, yeah, Apple, Nike, but some are just not household names. So the liquor company Quechco Muay Thai and the South African telecoms firm Naspers.
Yeah.
Is it actually useful to do things on a global level when these markets are so diverse and companies can be a great hit in one place but not necessarily other places in the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's the interesting thing that's happening in branding right now is that regardless of where you're from in the world, regardless of what sector you're in, regardless of whether you are a new company or an old company, i.e. post-millennium, you didn't exist before the millennium or afterwards, what's interesting and exciting is that while there are many different ways to manage a brand these days, what all of the well-managed brands really share, it's just one thing, regardless of where they're from, is the ability to align their purpose, you know, why they exist, with the experiences they give people every day. Now, when you say Chinese brands are on the rise, Chinese brands are no panacea. Some brands that are Chinese are not doing so well, and some brands are. Some, as I say, some small brands are, or small within the context of the PwC top 100 list, are punching way above their weight. And some brands you'd expect to be doing really well, some companies that are, you know, absolutely famous household names with huge market capitalizations, are kind of being dragged back because fundamentally they are not doing such a good job of aligning why they exist with the experiences they give people. And when I say people, I mean employees, I mean customers, I mean investors, I mean everyone that's involved in that brand.
You've been running this for now 4 years. Does it actually follow through? Is it such a bad thing to be a company which is big in terms of market capitalization, not so good in terms of a global brand? I'm thinking in terms of the energy companies, the big finance companies, particularly US banks, that traditionally score quite poorly on this. They're doing all right in terms of still making the money.
There is certainly some evidence that, take a brand like Apple.
Mm-hmm.
4 years ago in 2014, Apple we predicted would be fourth on the index. This year it still is fourth on the index, which suggests a company that is was 4 years ago was predicted to, you know, if it future-proofed itself and ran its purpose and experience in the right way, it would be fourth in the future. And lo and behold,
which
it's fourth in the
do.
Future, which it's managed to achieve. So it has delivered on expectation, if you like. There are other companies that were higher up the list that are no longer up the list. And there are other companies that were lower down the list, or indeed not even on the list, who have now come and punched quite high up in the Future Brand Index. There are a bunch of companies this year that weren't on the PwC Top 100, for example, last year at all. So we can, you know, obviously class those as new entrants. And Muay Thai is a great example of that, where to some extent it's come from nowhere, but if you operate in a global environment, you'll realize it's the biggest spirits brand in the world, that it's been giving Diageo a very hard time in not just in its home market but increasingly across the world. So I think that what this gives people that run businesses is a bit of a blueprint. It says, look, if you are wherever you are right now, you can get a fix on where you sit in terms of how well aligned you are on purpose and experience. If you're able to increase your experiences in line with the purpose, then the likelihood is that you will increase on our index, which should have an increase on the PwC top 100. Of course, there are other factors that will determine, you know, market capitalization beyond brand, but brand is often a good indicator of the future.
It is unfortunate from a, you know, purely patriotic view that there are no British firms in the top 10. Are we just not punching our weight, or is it a question of just being somewhere in the middle?
When you work across the world, as we do, what you inevitably see is that there is just a sheer scale factor that companies in the US and China have. Not only do they have a legacy of being strong on things like the PwC Top 100, but they seem to benefit from a very strong home domestic market. What we notice about UK businesses across the index, they sort of, in 2014, when we started the survey, UK businesses, UK-based business companies that are on the list dropped. And they haven't really recovered. They haven't gone any worse since 2014. They've sort of rallied a little bit, but they've not been able to recover to their 2014 level. And there are a whole bunch of reasons for this. One thing that we do notice...
And just before I before we go on, what kind of companies are we talking about here?
So the British firms we're talking about are typically in financial and energy. We're talking about Shell, HSBC, BP, UK-based or at least partly UK-based firms. Mm-hmm. We've also got British American Tobacco and GlaxoSmithKline, GSK.
Now, the elephant in the room is Brexit, where brands are going to have to decide one way or the other whether they stay in terms of the UK and the FTSE. Go elsewhere. We had Unilever only last week pulling back from a decision to leave the UK as its headquarters. Is this something that is actually going to impact in terms of brands? Because the nature of Britishness, global Britain, etc., is something that British brands do play on.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously don't want to wade too much into the politics of it, but I think from a brand and business perspective, one of the real strengths of US and Chinese companies is an extremely strong domestic home market, it would appear. And the ability to draw strength from those different places, not only does it give character and interest and relevance to those brands, it gives sheer muscle. I think if you are a British-based company and you happen to be in a country that has decided to self-select itself out of its big home market, then there probably is going to be a knock-on effect in the future. Essentially, you're going from being associated with a very big, strong home market to fundamentally a niche, more of a niche play, because you're coming just from Britain, and Britain has some interesting strengths, but in the world, isn't that big and isn't potentially that important.
So looking ahead then to 3 years, 5 years down the line, are you expecting those British firms to have dropped down or even out of this index?
It depends what they do. I mean, if they are able to address why they exist, their purpose, and they're able to offer up credible, meaningful and exciting experiences across the board for people who work for them, for people who might want to work for them, for people who want to use them as customers or as consumers and for investors, then the future's as exciting for them as it should be for anyone else. I think when we ask our informed global audience how they perceive which companies to be moving ahead in 3 years' time, that is undeniably dominated right now by Chinese and America, or Chinese stroke Asia Pacific technology and healthcare brands. And I think that the ability to attract talent, the ability to invest in skills, and the ability to offer up that type of high value audience and high value marketplace is inevitably, I think, something that's a big part of the wider conversation that's happening in this country, which is great because it's something that obviously is part of the of what's going on and part of what's driving the success of American and especially Chinese brands. We do quite a lot of work in China these days. It's something that's evolving very fast. And what you notice over there is there is an interesting sort of cultural context that they operate in terms of wanting to looking very long term. Some of the Chinese values associated with harmony, I think, are very attractive to not just employees, but also investors and what have you. And that creates brands that have a degree of organization and scale to them. And you couple that with the fact that Chinese employees and people we come across as clients are often, you know, traveled the world themselves. We're looking at a country that's internationalizing incredibly fast. And actually, this got some very exciting brands with some very good managers and leaders.
So, again, looking ahead, presumably more of those will become household names in the next couple of years.
Yeah, certainly. When you look ahead and you look at the brands that are present, some of the Chinese banks, I think, will become pretty mainstream. I was walking here today and I walked past two of them just on the way from West London into where we are right now. There's two of them in London. And I think we'll be looking at some of the tech companies that are... some of the tech companies we've always known and are familiar with, you know, the Alphabets and the Apples, but there's also companies like Nvidia who are going to become much more present in people's minds and as employers as well as companies that are part of our lives. I mean, so much of what we do in terms of gaming and platform gaming is based on Nvidia technology, and they're perceived hugely positively by a lot of people across our survey.
Well, finally then, John, if you were one of the companies or running one of the companies that is in the bottom part of this list, so still an enormously big company in terms of value, in terms of market capitalization, but not doing so well in terms of brand, what would you actually have to do to get up that list? And in terms of the money being spent, is it worth it?
The number one watch out for any brand any brand, because you can go up and down quite fast these days, is banality. You know, you need to get away from being banal. And
by so you don't want people to be indifferent to you.
Exactly. You know, Unilever, I mentioned, is a brand that's been struggling a little bit. The number one emotion or attribute associated with Unilever right now is indifference.
Ironic for a company that makes Marmite. You either love it or you hate it.
Well, exactly. And also, you know, to some extent, you know, a company that for so long has stood for a very clear, strong purpose and has led the way in terms of, you know, standing up and having real purpose at the heart of the business. What's slightly worrying for them is across both purpose and a lot of their experience measures, they're down. Indifference around product and service experience is could easily be one of the drivers of that. And I think what I'd say to any company that's at the lower end of the list or on any list is that constant battle away from banality.